When the first constitutional revolution took place early in 1917, I was with a British field hospital attached to the Russian army fighting on the Romanian front. The soldiers, like everybody else, were affected by the revolution, and there could be no doubt that they welcomed it. Every now and then, lorries would come roaring out of military camps full of shouting soldiers with scarlet ribbons pinned to their long overcoats. And off they would go to some clearing in the woods where there would be a barrel of wine, a band, or at least a concertina, dancing, and speeches. Officers and men fraternized, and everybody was free and easy. When I got back to Petrograd in March, the capital was like the front. Everybody was happy. All the police stations had been gutted by fire, other buildings looked shabby, and there were holes in the pavements of the Nevsky. But among the people there was a sort of careless glory, and whatever the morrow might bring, today was always a birthday. Freedom had come alive again, and this time it would not die. An enormous number of public meetings were going on, not only in such large buildings as were available, but also in the streets. On ordinary days, meetings were held at intervals of about 300 yards up and down both sides of the Great Nevsky Prospect. Sometimes it was a student, sometimes a workman, sometimes a soldier who was doing the speaking. But whoever it was eager, optimistic, and eloquent. All over the place, posters advertised meetings to be held in theatres and public halls. The public meeting was, for these rejoicing Russians, a delightful treat. No such thing had ever been permitted to them by the Tsar's government, except on rare occasions and under police supervision, and there was not even a Russian word which would describe the spontaneous coming together of a group of people for the purpose of hearing somebody make a speech on a matter of public interest. Every poster summoned people to a meeting, the English word spelt in Russian characters. This right of coming together and talking about public affairs was to these early revolutionaries the most precious thing they could think of, and on every possible excuse they met and talked and asked questions and passed resolutions. I heard a good story about one of these meetings. It took place at Saratov, down on the Volga. It was held in a great hall, and at the hour fixed for it to begin, the chairman addressed the packed audience, filling every chair on the floor and all the standing room at the back and sides. Comrades, he said, Tovarishchi was already in fashion, comrades, there are hundreds of comrades outside who want to get in. Will those of you who have seats please move forward as far as you can? There was then a great scraping of chairs as everybody dragged his seat a few inches forward, and room was made for a few hundred more eager listeners at the back. The chairman stepped forward again. Comrades, there are still comrades outside, and many of them have never yet been able to attend a meeting. Will those of you who have already had a meeting please go out and give a chance to those comrades who have been less lucky? And some hundreds of people got up and walked out, leaving their seats for their unfortunate brethren who had never yet had the treat of being present at a political meeting. That's what the revolution meant in its early stages, a grand universal blowing off of long-suppressed political steam. I was reminded of Wordsworth's lines about the French Revolution. Bliss was it then to be alive, but to be young was very heaven. Somewhere in the background, of course, were the gloomy Bolsheviks.